Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, we're back. We took vacation, each of us respectively, back to back, which means we took 2 weeks off.
Uh-huh.
And we're coming back, and you're sick, so there's no wine tonight. But I did give you a bottle of wine,
because yes,
while I was gone, you kept Podcat alive.
I did, along with my friend Eileen checked in on him a couple of times, too. But yes, I would have felt very guilty if anything had happened to Podcat in your absence.
So you went to London, and I went to Bangor, Maine, in New Brunswick Province, Canada. I don't know, take your pick on which one was,
very pretty. It's very pretty up there in Maine and Canada.
So this evening, you are nursing a water and a hacking cough. I'm working on a vodka ginger ale, and I don't know, like a vodka orange juice, a lot of people, some people call it a screwdriver, some people call it a highball. I don't know if there's a proper name for vodka ginger ale, so if there is one out there, folks, let us know, like tweet it or put it as a response on our podcast here. What is a vodka ginger ale called? And if not, if it doesn't have a name, make one up. I'm interested. We should coin it here first.
All right. I'm feeling very jealous now looking at my water bottle and at your vodka ginger ale.
Get out of my vodka ginger ale. We also saw different films while apart. While you were in London, I saw one about a megalodon called the Meg. And while I was in Canada, you saw something about Crazy Rich Asians. So we're going to skip over things that already opened. We might quickly recap at the end of the podcast things we saw that maybe you should see or definitely should not see. I think I have more of those. However, what probably, I'm just guessing, I didn't look, what may be the biggest film this week, because it already opened on Wednesday, it already has $5 million in its pocket, is something called Crazy Rich Asians. And for some reason, Hannah, this rom-com, which I didn't see, only you saw, it's getting a lot of buzz about culture. It's culturally different. Why, Hannah, is Crazy Rich Asians blowing up the Twitter sphere, the Facebook sphere, all about culture?
Well, because it is a romantic comedy that features a predominantly Asian cast and Asian story, but
is that not usual?
No, I don't think I can recall any similar type of scenario from any recent rom-coms or romantic dramas. Can you?
I never saw The Joy Luck Club. I think I was in high school when that came out.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, we're going back a little ways there. And so I think, but what I find most interesting is that for all the buzz it's getting about having this predominantly Asian cast and Asian storyline, it's got universal chick flick appeal. I mean, it is a conventional, in most respects, a very conventional, traditional romantic comedy. And it's almost kind of Dynasty-esque, you know, where you've got this...
That's a reference really, a little bit outside my wheelhouse, but
really
I think I know
rich,
where you're going.
You got this really rich clan, and there's just all the backstabbing and the glamour and the glitz and the food porn in this film you would really enjoy. Because they made some amazing dishes in Singapore. But basically, this is also based on a very popular book, a trilogy, in fact. So, which means only one thing, that if this movie does even remotely well, you will see that second book because you see kind of where it could go. And so I think it's based on this trilogy by this guy, Kevin Kwan. And this Rachel Chu, played by Constance Wu.
Whoa.
I've never seen Fresh Off the Boat on television, have you?
No.
But apparently it's been on for like 4 seasons, and Constance Wu has been...
We watch too many movies to watch TV.
Yeah, and so apparently she's actually, you know, been playing this role of this Asian-American mom on Fresh Off the Boat. And so here in Crazy Rich Asians, she's playing this very bright, attractive, fun New York economics professor. And she's dating this cute, charming guy, Nick Young. And he invites her to go home to Singapore with him to attend the wedding of his best friend. And
she's an economics professor.
I know.
Come
she's an economics professor because she's smart.
Come on.
But very down to earth. And so they get on the plane to go to Singapore, and this is the first time that suddenly Rachel discovers that good old boyfriend Nick is, like, loaded. Like, his family comes from, like, major, major, major money.
He's got some scratch.
And so that's what triggers this sort of where this whole comedy takes off. And they get to Singapore, and he's got this very formidable mother, Eleanor, played by Michelle Yeoh from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Love her.
So she's a veteran. You know, she's the one where you see
how... She's not Singaporean, by the way. She's Malaysian.
Well, and there's a bit, there's a lot of Malaysian stuff going on in this film, too. But she's trying to undermine their relationship because she doesn't feel like any girl is going to be good enough for her Nick.
She's probably right.
And so you would probably hate this movie because, you know, the one thing that really kind of it reminded me of was sort of your favorite Sweet Home Alabama.
I know where you're going with this because there's a domineering mother.
There's the domineering in Sweet mother Home in Sweet Home Alabama, and there's the...
That's not why I hate that movie,
you know,
by the way.
Well, but whatever reason you have for it, it just would taint, I think, your enjoyment of this one. But the real standout in this one, so they're in Singapore. You get this great visuals of these really, just how the other half lives, these really rich people.
I always wondered how the other half lived.
And then you've got this college friend of Rachel's who lives there too. And that's played by Awkwafina, who was in
She was the fence.
She was the fence. She's the one who's really got the sleight of hand.
Yeah, she was the card sharp in that one.
Yeah. And so this is her. This is like a huge breakout year for her because she is hysterical in this movie. And so just like you've got.
See, you know how the rom com always has the best friend?
She is the best friend. She is that sidekick.
They always get the best lines.
That has her back, you know, and is savvy to the. To that world, to the young clan, and so while you've got all these other women who are socialites who are really kind of pissed off that Rachel is potentially taking away the most eligible bachelor in Singapore, her friend Piglin has her back and definitely has the scene stealing lines, and it's just really fun, and it's just got everything. It's got that scorn and the sabotage, and but then the heart and humor that comes with any other with any other rom-drom. Yeah. And you know, the couple at its heart, this couple of Rachel and Nick, you root for them all the way. And so it's just a good, entertaining romantic comedy, and we don't get many of those. And so the bonus is that you're introduced to this new culture that you don't see in every other standard
rom-com. We just saw, you and me, a Singaporean film at the AFI Documentary Film Festival. We saw one called Shirkers.
Yes,
it was,
this is
it was
not
Singaporean.
Oh my gosh, and I'll tell you, I would watch this one 100 times over versus Shirkers. So this one kind of erased the memory of Shirkers, which needed to be erased. And so Crazy Rich Asians, if you like a good romantic comedy, this is it. And the fact that it's a predominantly Asian cast, it shouldn't really
so even though people
affect your enjoyment
in America who go to this, you know, they're with their girlfriends
this
weekend.
They won't know where Singapore is.
And they're not Asian. They're still going to like it.
So you've got the Asians are going to love the representation that they're getting, that you have Asians playing these Asian roles, and everyone else is just going to enjoy it. For the fact that it's just an enjoyable film. Mm-hmm. And so it was a popular book in the book club circuit. The next one is called China Rich Girlfriend, and I suspect we will see.
Wow, these are great titles.
And then the third one, Rich People Problems.
RPP.
I just don't split Rich People Problems into two books or two movies because that would really piss
me off.
They
tend to do that with trilogies.
Exactly, which will not work here.
So I don't know why they did this. Every now and then this does happen. It's rare, maybe one a year, one every other year. Crazy Rich Asians open on a Wednesday. Sometimes they do that before a holiday. Well, this is not the case. We're nowhere near a holiday. Well, Labor Day is like a week and a half away. But they open on Wednesday. I don't know why they did it. Yeah. I think maybe to inflate their weekend take. So it already made $5 million on its first like day and a half, which is a big chunk of change for a romantic comedy on a weekday.
Yeah.
So this thing, I don't know. I'm looking at it. Maybe it'll make 100 mil. If it makes 100, it's going to get a sequel. Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure it will get a sequel. And and it's good. That's probably the other
reason. Oh, it's good.
Why.
Okay. Well, then. Well, all right. Well, there's another wide release this week, and you were on your deathbed, so you didn't go. So I went to check it out. It's called Mile 22. Peter Berg. We've seen Peter Berg before, and we've seen him direct Mark Wahlberg. In fact, we've seen him do that four times now. First time he did it was Lone Survivor. I loved Lone Survivor. In fact, I believe it made my top 10 best list that year. You probably didn't like it.
No, I did. It was brutal.
Brutal violence in that film. But I just loved that film. And then he did Deepwater Horizon. Then he did Patriot's Day.
Which is good.
And now he's done Mile 22. Peter Berg has a, he's got a patriotic streak. You know, he loves America. Loves America.
Mark Wahlberg.
And he loves heroes. And he likes making Mark Wahlberg into a hero. And he does it again. This time, Mark Wahlberg is the CIA operative of CIA. He's the best of the best. He's number one. He's Maverick of Top Gun. You know, he's, in fact, he's the elite of the elite. They're called the Overwatch. When you need to get something done, when you need to recover cesium that's on the market that can create, you know, dirty bombs and kill a whole bunch of people and make cities uninhabitable, you send Overwatch. And of course, it's like the IMF in Mission Impossible. Complete deniability. You don't exist. You're a ghost. So he's a ghost. And he's also, you know, he's quirky. He's got tics. He goes on these long soliloquies when he really gets into it, just taking people apart. And he's really hyper-intelligent. And he happens to be just as good with a gun. And he always snaps a rubber band on his wrist because his mind goes fast, 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 fast. And he needs to slow it down by snapping the rubber band on his wrist, which gets got on my nerves after a while. His team, he's got a big, I don't know, 8 to 10 person team, but you don't get to know a lot of them because a lot of them die frequently. And but we get to know one of them. Her name's Alice. I call her Alice the Mom, played by Lauren Cohan, because they go overboard. Peter Berg goes overboard. Yes, I get it. She's mom, and she's probably in the wrong line of work to be a mom. She's missing her milestones as her child, as her daughter grows up, and her husband divorced her because she's never home, and now there's a stepmom who wants to find the recipes to the muffin she loves, and she's dying on the inside. And oh, but here I have to kill all these bad guys. With it reminded me of Lone Survivor because all the Americans, without even aiming, they just shoot people in the forehead, right there in the middle of the forehead. And the bad guys, they have this arsenal of ammunition to barely, like, graze a good guy. Now, Mile 22... It's a unit of distance. It's a measurement. We have to get this guy right here. This guy, this double agent, he's coming here. He's going to tell us where the cesium is. Where's all the stuff you need to get? I'll tell you when you get me on a plane, you get me out of the country and give me asylum. And it's going to take him 22 miles to do that. Not a summer drive. Not a weekend getaway. Between them and the airstrip they need to go of 22 miles are a whole bunch of motorcycle bad guys, government bad guys, grenades, guns, bombs, you name it. It's a rough ride. It's intense. My heart was racing. My heart was pounding. Like, whoa, it's a terrible script. It's an awful script. I don't know why the bad guys are trying to kill them. But then, and they never tell us. They just never tell us. And it's just a god awful script. And but the action, oh, and the editing is some of the worst I've ever seen in my entire life.
Well,
you can't see the action scenes. It's too fast.
Well, it's interesting because my friend Gabe, who edited Patriot's Day and Deepwater Horizon, was busy editing Blindspotting, did not edit this one.
It's terrible editing. It reminded me of Taken 3.
So maybe they needed to go back to their editors from those films.
Because the double agent, if you've seen The Raid or The Raid 2, that stars Iko Uwais. He's a Muay Thai martial artist expert. Just kung fu badassery. This guy is so good. You can't see him. The takes and the edits and the cuts are so fast. You don't know who is ripping off whose arm and beating them with it, or shooting who, or hitting whom with whatever found object is on the street right there. I don't have a clue. And I'm not alone in it. Everybody says, we can't see anything, Peter Berg. What are you doing? Slow. Like, I know it's fast. I know it's frenetic. I know you're trying to establish chaos. Slow down, brother. I can't make heads or tails. So that just ruins the... I mean, the script already ruined the movie. But, however...
Yes.
I felt it. I physically felt this movie. I was really... The tension was real. So he still created the feeling you need to care. I'm not recommending the movie. It has too many cons that can't meet up with the pros, but meh.
So it sounds like it's a good thing that I saw Crazy Rich Asians as opposed to Mile 22.
This isn't your movie. I don't think you would have done it, but I think like you would have felt
but,
it.
But and I generally really do like the pairing of Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg, so I have liked their previous four films.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, he continues it. I'm a patriot. I love America. And this is another one. This is out of those four we listed. Yeah. This is 4 out of 4. Okay. It's the worst one. He did Battleship. If you remember, he made the movie Battleship. It's kind of like, it's along that line. Okay. Yeah, so meh.
All right.
All right, the next one's a documentary. And I got a kick out of this documentary. Scotty and the Secret History of Hollywood. A couple years ago, Scotty, in 2012, wrote a book. They call it a tell-all book called Full Service. Scotty, back in the 1940s and 1950s, was the pimp to the stars. He got Cary Grant, his boys. He got Katharine Hepburn, her girls. And had a trailer in the back of his gas station where, you know, you could do whatever you need to do to feel like a human being for 10 minutes. And he wrote a book about it. And he's got the bona fides. Like, he's got the pimps that are still alive saying, yeah, I did that. And so I believe him. I do. I believe
him. Yeah. No, there were no apologies, that's for sure.
Yeah, but there was controversy when when the book came out 6 years ago. You should never out someone even after they're dead. Or all the people he's talking about are dead, so they can't defend themselves or add on to the conversation. How dare you, sir? How dare you? And then you have someone awesome like Stephen Fry saying, I'm glad you wrote the book. This reminds us that movie stars, these glossy, publicist-bound movie stars, are real people. They're just like us. Yeah, they're not better than you.
No, but this, we're not talking better. I mean, it's, I don't know. I felt the whole thing was TMI. I really did. I understand both sides to the argument, that the ones who say, look, do we really need to know all about the quirks and I mean, even there was royalty that they oh my god, it was like, well, you know, got a gal for the Duchess and a guy for the Duke, and they were so happy with me. And it's like, oh, it was just it was a little much.
I don't think it is TMI, because I've been lied to, Hannah. I took the story hook, line, and sinker when they said Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn were in love. Spencer Tracy was married, but they were so in love, and everyone was accepting of their adulterous liaison in George Cukor's house. I bought that. I was like, oh, that's nice. No! Spencer Tracy was gay, and Katharine Hepburn was a lesbian, and they were trying to cover that up with a lesser sin of adultery back then.
Well, and they were kind of throwing shades of all sorts of things out there that, made, you know, people were going in every which way.
I had no idea.
No,
I believed it.
I didn't either, but I don't know if I want to know that all of my...
I didn't know Cary Grant was gay either, I guess I should have known.
Cary Grant, Ava Gardner, Katharine Hepburn, Spencer Tracy, Lana Turner. I don't need all of these...
I do.
Golden age of Hollywood people completely turned into.
It makes me look at Turner Classic Movies a different way.
There was this gas station in the shadow of the studio lots where, you know, they just all turned to Scotty to hook them up, and Scotty had turned tricks too. He was very happy about taking his turns.
He loves the lingo. I was tricking.
Oh, he
the
was
tricks.
Tricking. And the person I feel most sorry for in this documentary is poor Scotty's wife, who didn't know him until after he had, you know, lived that part of his existence. But he's like a hoarder, and they're living in these terrible situation with his house. And
the way we're describing the film, though, is we're kind of lying to the audience. It's 30%. About the 1940s and 1950s. It's really, this is a documentary about Scotty. And yeah, he's got a problem. He is a hoarder. He's got mental illness.
He's got all kinds of things.
I felt
going.
So bad.
He was abused. I don't like the fact, and I think that the filmmaker tried to point this out a little bit, that, well, you know, hey, Scotty, weren't you abused as a child? Didn't you were sexually abused by a priest.
He was, not even just a priest. He was passed around the priest.
But it's like, but Scotty is just constantly going, I did not do anything ever that I did not want to do. There was no abuse. There was no, you know, this, whatever happened to me happened because I wanted it to.
You know, I've never seen a guy so confident and less ashamed of his sexuality.
But it wasn't just, I don't like the message that he's sending for others who might argue that just because you didn't recognize that you were an abused child, because you didn't have the capacity to know right from wrong at that age, and the adults were manipulating and using you, and then everything you might have done from that point forward sort of stemmed from this root evil that happens in your childhood that you refuse to see as anything but just pure joy and pleasure, and just saying, you know, hey, you were doing a service. There were these clients who were in need. You filled the need. It was interesting to see it so close to the Cecil Beaton documentary.
Which comes up in this movie.
He does. And so it was interesting because I'm like, I hadn't heard of Cecil Beaton 3 weeks ago. And here suddenly in this film, Scotty's, you know, pulling out this book about Cecil and how Scotty's actually in Cecil's book. And so they were very similar in both of those documentaries, where these kind of interesting characters who were part of this underbelly of what was happening in glamorous Hollywood. And I think I like this one a little better than I thought it was a little more engaging than the Cecil Beaton doc, but I would be perfectly content not to have seen it. And I just think that this is a guy who, whether he would admit it or not, came from a very tragic existence in childhood, and it did color everything that he did.
Well, director Matt Tiernauer did us a favor, and he didn't direct the book that Scotty wrote. He included the book, but he directed a movie about Scotty's life now. It's like a 90, 92, 93-year-old guy. And we've seen a Matt Tiernauer film somewhat recently. I think it was last year. We saw Citizen Jane, mm-hmm. Battle for the City, about the woman who defeated the rich guy's plot to bisect Manhattan with a superhighway. And, you know, he's now made two films where I never heard of the person. I never heard of Jane. I never heard of Scotty, which is good. And I like this movie a little bit better than you did.
Mm-hmm. I figured you would.
But be careful. The movie poster is lying to you. It's not really about the famous people. They're in there, yes, but a little bit. It's about Scotty as an old man and how he looks back on his life and what he does now and how Cary Grant's pimp goes and finds nice-looking toilets on the side of the road because he may need one later. He's an interesting guy, and it's well put together. I don't love this documentary. I don't love it at all, but I like it.
Okay.
Finally, another Shakespeare adaptation. I've seen a Midsummer Night's Dream adaptations before. A recent Shakespeare adaptation, Much Ado About Nothing, by Joss Whedon, made my top 10 list in 2012. So I look forward to Shakespeare adaptations. I'm okay with them. This one missed.
Mm-hmm.
Ancient Athens, Confusion of Love, is now updated to contemporary Hollywood. And it comes off as a, I'm not going to say grad student project, but it looks like the funding is on that level.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got the... He didn't take anything out. He put a lot of stuff in. And he tried to be quirky. He tried to be wry. He tried to be witty. And I didn't take it from that. I don't know. I'm not feeling too much about Casey Wilder Mott's feature film debut, the adaptation of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah, I mean, it's trying to be this quirky mix of contemporary and classic Shakespeare, and it doesn't quite pull it off. And there was, I guess, a 1999 version with Kevin Kline,
Stanley Tucci.
And so when you have like an all-star cast like that who've pulled something like this off, Michelle Pfeiffer was in that one, to then give us this with, you know, people who aren't recognizable at all, and where, yeah, Hollywood is sort of this... the woods of Hollywood are supposed to be the woods of Athens, and it's just weird. The film's just weird, and it took me a while to even get in the rhythm of it because I'm not a Shakespeare person. And so I think if you are very familiar with A Midsummer Night's Dream to begin with, and the whole story and these characters and the supernatural aspect of it, then I think you're going to appreciate the satire a little more that's there. If you're not at all familiar with A Midsummer Night's Dream and Shakespeare plays, you know, on whole, then you're just really going to be completely lost in this film, because if you don't at least have the reality of what the original play is to play off of what this movie version is supposed to be, then I think you're just going to be like, that was just freaking weird.
I know this play very well, and it was still a miss for me, even though I knew what speech went where and how odd it was in certain situations that he did it. And you're right, it's mostly no-name players, except for Hermia. That's Rachel Lee Cook. Mm-hmm. We should remember her from like 20 years ago or 15 years ago from She's All That 20 years ago. And Hermia is now a Hollywood mega superstar actress. And Lysander, her suitor, is this like creative guitar guy who her father hates. And Helena is a wannabe script writer, while Demetrius is this sleazy, slick back hair, Wall Street kind of guy. So yeah, it's all there. It's just poorly executed. Mm-hmm. Like Helena's speech about love seeks with the mind and not the heart is terrible. It's at a poetry slam at an outdoor coffee shop that doesn't work. And the puns,
I thought that was one of the few things I thought did work.
Bottom and his posse don't work. Instead of the usual donkey ears you get with Bottom when he transforms into an ass, his face actually turns into a butt. Yeah. Which is terrible. And the puns. Bottom gets lost and walks into room 2B.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can guess where that's going. And there's an outdamn spot Macbeth reference later. It's just terrible. It's an off-putting adaptation. There are parts that kind of work, and especially in the woods, it kind of works. I like Puck, and I like Oberon, but there's way too many things that are missing here.
Yeah, and if you can't fill in those holes, then you're going to be even completely lost.
Yeah, this is just a weird
adaptation.
Weird. The only people really who should check it out are, you know, the Shakespeare files, and I know you're out there. of course you're going to check it out, but for everyone else, this is an easy skip. Just an easy skip.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll mention a couple other quick easy skips, too, because I did see this other one called Never Going Back, and that was about this pair of teenagers. It's an indie. They're like 16, 17 years old, and these two girls, they're living with with a brother who's like a aspiring drug dealer, and it's being compared to Spring Breakers and The Bling Ring, and I did not like those two films.
I hated Spring Breakers, but I love The Bling Ring.
So I guess it's possible that if you like those two films, then this one might have some interesting appeal. But these girls are just working extra shifts at this Texas diner, trying to scrape together enough money to go on a beach trip in Galveston. But it's a very quirky, odd indie that probably is in the vein of Spring Breakers. And so if you if that is something that appeals to you, then you might be somewhat interested in seeking out Never Going Back. But otherwise, I think it will have come and gone before you blink.
Well, I say skip The Meg, which was last week's big $40 million shark movie opener, because it's just ridiculous. Americans love shark movies. I love shark movies, and I love it when sharks eat human beings in movies. It's great. But director John Turteltaub made an R-rated version of it with amazing violence, and then the studio said, let's make this PG-13, and edit it out from under him. Into a PG-13 ridiculous stupid shark movie eating people. So no thanks. I love awesome big sharks, love everything about the idea. But no, they missed it. The studio made the wrong choice making this PG-13 film.
Oh, okay. Well, and The Spy Who Dumped Me, I forgot. That's going way back a couple of weeks
now. We saw
that
together, yeah.
So, but I don't think we've podcasted since then. We did not. And so that one, I mean, Crazy Rich Asians is by far the better choice for just a lighter flick this week. But The Spy Who Dumped Me was entertaining, but completely forgettable.
Completely.
So forgettable that I really did forget about it. But Mia Kunis and Kate McKinnon, they're entertaining to watch. But I swear I felt like you could have just swapped out Kate McKinnon for like Melissa McCarthy, and that would have been the same exact movie. Like nobody would be the wiser if you just mixed and matched with some of those lead roles.
I didn't hate The Spy Who Dumped Me, but I certainly didn't particularly like it. It is right there in the middle.
It is.
I say skip Christopher Robin.
Another
100 Acre Wood film. This time it's Ewan McGregor. It's like Hook. If you remember when Robin Williams went back to Never Never Land as an old dude, Ewan McGregor as Christopher Robin goes back to the 100 Acre Wood to realize, wow, I'm a bad father and I forgot all my childhood friends out here. And no, it's terrible. It's not good at all.
How does it compare to that other god awful Christopher Robin movie we saw a few months ago?
That one was. They'll both try to make you cry.
Yeah, that one was.
Goodbye, Christopher Robin will truly like tear your soul out of your chest.
Yeah, that was tragic.
But that was about Christopher Robin's childhood and about like a somewhat historical fiction documentary of the boy. This is a fiction film about Christopher Robin. What would happen if he grew up and went back? And it stinks. Oh. It's terrible.
Okay. Well, and then one that's not terrible, that's actually pretty good, is Black Klansman. And so I saw that one a few weeks back. But that's with John David Washington. Who knew Denzel had a son that was acting already? And apparently if you close your eyes and just kind of listen to his voice, you would think you might be listening to Denzel. So it was, you know, the fact that it's based on a true story and it's a Spike Lee movie, so it's well done. I'm not a huge fan of Spike Lee films. I put this one somewhere in the middle for me, because it is a crazy story in the fact that it's true, and it's compelling and so timely. And it is way too heavy-handed, way too preachy midway through, but it ends with real scenes from Charlottesville last year. And so it has the benefit of tying the past to the present in a way that is just can't be denied. And so for that, it's probably worth seeing. Adam Driver is in it. I really enjoy Adam Driver too. But I liked it better than Sorry to Bother You, but not as much as Blindspotting. So it just kind of fell into the middle of the films that I've seen in recent weeks that kind of tackle the... Tackle a little bit about race relations in the past, and are able to kind of pull it together with the present day situation.
The best film I have seen in the past 3 weeks is Puzzle.
Oh right, I forgot about Puzzle.
It's I think it's the first coming of age story I've ever seen featuring a 40-year-old woman. she's in the suburban Connecticut taking care of her auto mechanic husband and her two sons. And she really doesn't think about herself. She doesn't have any experiences. She's never been anywhere. And she realizes one day she is a prodigy at putting together jigsaw puzzles. And that opens doors. And that leads her to go experience the rest of the world. And man, I just fell in love with this movie. I loved everything about it.
Yeah, it's like a psychological drama, if I remember correctly. It's been several weeks since I saw that one, but I did like it. It reminded me of Bridges of Madison County, which I think you had said you hadn't seen. And so I do think you should go see Bridges, because you will actually spot a lot of very similar themes about, you know, this woman who's just sort of been living in this sort of secluded kind of existence, just basically in the service of her family, and has this... opportunity to connect with someone from the outside world, and it's all about sort of rediscovering herself. I'm not so sure I agreed with where it went, and so I think it is one of those ones where it will be a bit divisive.
Well, it's not about puzzles. It's about her realizing there's a big world out there, and I'm going to go see some of it while I still can. And the her we're talking about is Kelly MacDonald. She's going to make my current shortlist for best actress. She was so good.
She is very, very good in this.
And she's using this terrible. She's Scottish. She's so Scottish. She's the Scottish, most Scottish person I know, or at least on screen. And she does this American accent.
Yeah. But no, it's I agree. I'd forgotten a bit about Puzzle, but it is one that I think the arty fans out there, it sort of is that one that kind of bridges the divide a little, that has some mainstream appeal, even though it is generally an arty psychological drama flick.
All right, well, we're happy to be back here with the Cinema Clash. It's been too long. Quick recap with the new releases this week. Crazy Rich Asians,
thumbs up.
Mile 22, thumbs down. Scotty and the Secret History of Hollywood, thumbs
down.
Oh, we split, huh? And A Midsummer Night's Dream, thumbs down. All right, I think the biggest film next week is
what is next week?
I don't even have it right now.
I don't even know what we're seeing next week.
I guarantee
week.
You there's a new release next week. I couldn't tell you what it is.
I can't either. See.
Right on. Well, stay tuned, folks. There's going to be movies next week. Yeah.
It's a teaser for everyone.
Look up what it's going to be. But all right, on behalf of the Cinema Clash, I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Anna Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.